Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden Ashes Daily Podcast, coming to you after the fourth day at Lord's. England finished the day 114 for four, still needing another 257 runs to win. I'm Yaz Rana and I'm joined by Phil Walker. Phil, another topsy-turvy day. England did really well to restrict Australia after going all in on that short ball ploy. They took the final eight Australia wickets for 126 runs to give themselves an unlikely but not totally unreachable target of 371.
You're hedging your bets there, mate.
But then Stark and Cummins blew the England top order away. Four wickets with a new ball to leave Australia well on top despite evening runs from Duckett and Stokes. Phil, when Duckett plays that extremely weird shot off Cam Green late in the day, just after he's got to 50, it looked like it was over and done with. But that catch by Stark was eventually deemed not out by the TV umpire. Glenn McGraw was apoplectic on the BBC radio. But the laws, I think, are pretty clear. I think that's not out, but you disagree.
Oh, we're just going to reduce ourselves to talking about the Duckett wicket straight away. Look, as far as I saw it, he had complete control over the ball. It was a little bit dozy, to say the least, to allow this sort of ambiguity to creep in. But if the Stephen Smith wicket was given when he took Joe Root's wicket yesterday, or the day, God knows anymore, and if the Cameron Green catch from the first test counts as well, where both appeared to me pretty clear cut that some contact had been made with ball to ground, then if those two are given and this one isn't, where the motion or the control of the catch was most established from the Stark one compared to the other two, and while, as I say, he was a bit silly, I think it was such an afterthought what was happening by that point, because he'd already taken the catch and he'd almost moved past the motion, past the moment of recognition when you do catch it, and into almost the relaxed moment where you're contemplating them being five down. It was such a large gap, right, between the ball going in comfortably enough and then this dozy moment. There was such a big moment for me, space of time between the one and the other. I think they were two separate things. I don't see it as the one motion. I don't see it as was the case with Stephen Smith. I felt like he needed to use the ground in order to re-retrieve control of the ball. And if you remember, it rolled up his arm and he finally managed to pouch it somewhere in his belly. There was more of a question mark against that one, although I would have given that one too. So look, I haven't read any social media. I was on the commentary at the time. I might be barking up the wrong tree here. Ultimately, let's not reduce what's been an extraordinary day's cricket to, you know, well, he said, I think this, you think that, blah, blah, blah.
I'm just going to run through the law quickly to get it out of the way.
I read the law myself. 33.3, right?
But the listeners won't be aware of it. So law 33.3 reads, the act of making a catch shall start from the time when the ball first comes into contact with a fielder's person and shall end when a fielder obtains complete control over the ball and his and her movement. So I guess third umpire Erasmus probably has interpreted that as saying that Stark hasn't completed control of the ball with also having control over his own movement. And there was a very, very similar example in a T20I between New Zealand and Bangladesh a couple of years ago, where exactly the same thing happens with Carl Jameson. He basically catches the ball, then puts the ball onto the ground after having caught the ball. And the umpire deemed that Jameson didn't have full control over his movement when he did that. And I think that when the Green and Smith ones that you talk about, I think the TV umpires are essentially saying in those moments that the ball hasn't touched the ground. I disagree with them with that, but I think that's what they're saying.
So if you disagree with them with that, do you disagree with those wickets being given? Those?
Yeah, I think so. I think the ball
so you think all three should not have been given?
Yeah, that's what I think. I think quite often it's touching the ground when the umpires don't deem it to be. Anyway, back to the real cricket.
I tell you what it did do. It whipped the patrons up.
It really did. Yeah. It really did.
It had echoes of Birmingham for the first time in what's been a strangely quiet and subdued cricket match. It got everybody going. And look, from a pure theatrical perspective, it's a good result because people, idiots like me, will turn up tomorrow morning and not be able to shake that stupid voice, that irrational, silly voice in the back of your head saying, well, hold on, if this happens and if that happens and if they get a bit of luck here and they get a bit of luck there and if Stokes pulls out a Stokesian, and I hate that voice because it's groundless. It's broadly groundless as far as I understand it. But with that reversal, that weird reversal at the end of the day,
there's still a chance.
There is still a objectively chance. A small, vanishingly small, but nonetheless legitimate chance.
There's a point in the day, not to be too dramatic, where I feared not just for England's Ashes chances, but I feared for the future of Test cricket, in that I thought teams will never ever pitch the ball up with the old ball ever again. England went 3 hours without bowling a single full delivery, and it was a very successful 3 hours, 8 for 126. And given how Australia was so successful with short ball ploy early in the game, I was like, this is it. And it was not quite unwatchable, but not far off. It was so dull, that period at the start of the lunch session, afternoon session, where England were bowling short to Carey and Green were having none of it. The game was going absolutely nowhere. Why do you think we've seen so much of the short ball in this game?
Well, this is a really big question, because are we seeing a fundamental gear shift in the tactics and strategies of Test cricket to reflect, if you like, a little bit more one-day cricket? With three or four men out on the boundary being standard, digging it in, slower ball bounces as well as chin music, all the rest of it? Or is this broadly a one-off in response to a quite eccentric pitch in some ways that was up and down with indifferent bounce from the start? It's not been a bad pitch as such, in that we've got here to day five, we've had runs. We still have all three or four results theoretically possible going into day five. So the pitch has been fine, but it has been quite unusual. And perhaps, if we're being charitable, it's been a reaction to that. And if there is indifferent bounce, then you see top edges from players that would otherwise, you'd imagine that they would roll their wrists on it. With Steve Smith getting out to it, which you'd never imagine Steve Smith would get out to that obvious ploy, then perhaps that indicates that the pitch has dictated the strategy.
Yeah.
But we shall start to see. One thing, you are right, it was almost unwatchably awkward. That six over period, I assumed that they were trying to just suck those six overs out of the game and then go to Anderson and Broad as a last hurrah. We could come to that if you like. With the new ball, they didn't do it. Stokes did, he reprised his role to an extent from Headingley, where he bowled, I think, 11 or 12 on the spin. Not quite as dramatically, but still with that sense of jeopardy, because you could see how he was grimacing and wincing. And Robinson, I thought, bowled a very, very good spell as well in that moment.
Nine overs for seven.
In that moment. And it was nasty, brutish and short. And it was fearfully and soullessly effective.
And I think there are a few other things going on there. You've got the team selection, England going in with five seamers, which means that these guys can keep doing it because they won't have to bowl another spell for a very long time. Stokes also quite likes to really bowl his bowlers into the dirt. So he obviously bowled the 11-12 over spell, but Ollie Robinson bowled a 9-over spell, Josh Tung bowled a 9-over spell.
In the morning.
And also, as you touched on, I thought it was actually really impressive how accurate they were. As you saw actually at the end of the day, that Australia bowled a few wides doing it. They sometimes bowled two balls over shoulder height quite early in the over, which restricted their options late in the over. I thought it was actually really impressive what England did. And also the other thing, which might be the more long-term tactical trend, I think England have been guilty of using the short ball in the past and not having the field to really reflect it. They kind of half-ass it. They have two men out on the leg side, whereas this time, completely all in. So if there's a top edge, they're much more likely to get a wicket through it. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that carries out over the rest of the series. There were some dull periods, sure, but that little passage when Lyon hobbled out was good fun.
Yeah, it was quite a moving experience, in truth. If Ashes cricket is spectacle first and foremost, and if you're looking to just add another line or two to this endless epic, then people who were here... I've got a friend here, actually, who was here with his wife today, and they've started making a bit of a habit of coming here. And I thought of them because they're not new cricket fans, but they're still learning some of the depths of what this madness is, right? And seeing him walk down the steps, aided, as if he's James Brown in his final moments, his whole entourage just helping him down onto the stage, having to wait on the steps because he knew as and when Hazelwood, I think it was, would be dismissed, he wouldn't be able, he'd be timed out, he wouldn't be able to make it in time. So you're already seeing that. Stark ran off. So when Hazelwood was out, Stark ran off, thinking, right, get the pads off, crack on, only to see this chap emerge. And when he batted really well, by the way,
yeah.
when he hit that pull shot for four,
and
moment of the series, and the crowd went berserk, right?
I was going to say, you talked about the crowd reaction to the duck it, catch, no catch at the end of the day. I thought the crowd really kind of woke up for the first time this test match when Lyon came out. That standing ovation to Lyon just literally hobbling down the steps out of the pavilion was actually the moment that woke them up for the first time.
It was a great moment. The maddest moment of the day, I would say, would have to be when Stark hit it out to the grandstand. Yeah. Rayan Ahmed took an amazing one-handed catch, like the backhanded claw catch, a bit reminiscent of Stokes against South Africa in 2019 in the World Cup. Managing the process, as we see regularly now, but it's still remarkable. Managed to flick it back. Meanwhile, Nathan Lyon has given it up and is now mid-pitch as the ball is now heading back, and he has to try and stumble over the line, stuck in no man's land, and collapses in a heap afterwards. Single, end of the over, move on. Just a mad little mini passage of play. Rousing stuff. And spoke actually of Australia not fearing that they didn't have enough, that every single run mattered. And again, you doff your cap to what Stokes' team managed last year, chasing 370 against India and so on and so on. And so they needed all the runs they could get. And that 15 runs in the context of it won't be important, I don't think. But It demonstrates just how much nip and tuck this series is, even though we are looking at the likelihood of 2-0 up, 3 to play.
I know England got form for producing remarkable things in the fourth innings under Stokes, but I think this would be trumping the lot of them. And, you know, if you're looking for differences between the two sides, that new ball burst from Stark and then Cummins following him up.
Right.
So England have just not really had that threat with the ball all series. I mean, from an English perspective, I thought that Cummins ball to Brook, it was reminiscent of Cummins ball to Root at Old Trafford in 2019, and had quite a similar effect, I think, on the English mood. It was very deflating. You're like, right, I know we've still got Stokes and Bairstow to come, but there's very, very little after it.
I think this
would be off the charts compared to the stuff that England achieved last year.
Yeah, look, however much we can theorise and deconstruct the Stokesian era, and however quickly people can react and then turn their back on it, and you're going to get that. And however much there's legitimate criticisms regarding the hubris, the arrogance of certain moments, and the game sense ineptitude in this game in particular at certain moments, nonetheless, there is no compensating for the golfing class between their champion bowlers, who are in their absolute prime, and our bowlers. There is no... You can't compensate for that.
Mm.
If you have those two plus Hazelwood, that's an all-time trio.
Mm.
England have two champions, and they have in Robinson a very good young seamer. And they've got a tearaway quick who impresses me more and more. But we can't escape the fact that Jimmy Anderson's currently, he's not the bowler that he was. He knows it himself. You can see it in his body language. He's dropped two catches. He's laboured in the field. And he's taken three wickets for 200 and plenty, one of which was a rank long hop, which was
barely turned to today.
Yeah, and Broad again, who's probably been England's pick across the two games overall, he wasn't looked at for the first 80 minutes today either. The golf in class and where they are in their respective careers, you can't get round that. Mm. So if you are looking for a defence of Bazball, awful word. If you're looking for a defense of it, it is trying to compensate for the clear difference in class and golf in class. Mm. And so perhaps you need to be thinking outside the box in order to try and see if that can shrink that gap.
Mm. Finally, Andrew asks, any comforting Chaz and Dave quotes for us today?
Right. Well, that is the kind of question that really... it really gets me going, yes, as you know. So, right, the first thing we thought, obviously, is from Ain't No Pleasing You, probably their classic, I would say, their standout classic, their anthem.
I'm not going to be able to offer much to this conversation.
No, you just nod along. Yeah. You had me where you wanted me, and you went and blew it, right? So if you want a summary of English cricket's latest psychodrama, right, then you can do worse than that. I've had a bleed enough of this. That's another line.
And you asked for comfort.
Well, no doubt, if I were to put these to Stokes, he would say, well, firstly, oh, darling, there ain't no pleasing you, which is a fair comment against English cricket's fractious fan base. And look, they're only ever going to double down, folks. So look, if you don't believe what I say and you think I'm bluffing, you've got another thing coming. I'll tell you that for nothing.
Excellent. Well, that's it for today. Cheers, Phil. We'll be back tomorrow. England need 257 on that final day. Australia need 6 wickets. We'll be back when it's all over.
It can be done. It won't be, but it can be done.
Sports Social Podcast Network.